with the 32-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's host.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Community Matters. My name is Ron Pertee, and for those who are uninitiated with who I am, I have been broadcasting since 2005, not just in new media like the internet, but also from a radio station as well. So I have some background in this. I'm also a writer, film critic, and host, and I want to thank you all for welcoming me into your world here on Community Matters.
Today I want to talk about horror and how for the third year in a row it'll be stalking the Kemper Center here in Kenosha, September 13th and 14th. My guest today is David Haight. Like many filmmakers, he got his start in middle school, and now he's been working in the business semi-professionally for the last 10 years or so. The Kenosha native founded the Port Arthur Film Festival in 2022, and he's here today to talk about the third year. David, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Ron.
Now, I got to ask you, when it comes to the film festival, right off the bat, what made you want to go to the Kemper Center as opposed to like a theater, per se?
Sure. So one of the things that Kenosha has is a lot of theaters. However,
yes,
they are pretty much defunct.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them have some substantial costs to renovate and restore them. The only theater that we really have in town is the Rhodey,
right,
and unfortunately the Rhodey at the time, they couldn't fit us into their schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So when we were starting the film festival, we had to find a way to get as many people into a room as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way to do that when you're downtown is the Kemper Center.
Okay.
Because there's no convention centers down there. There's no huge spaces outside of maybe a couple, like one or two ballrooms that are going to cost way more than we going to have, you know, the funding for.
Right.
So we partnered with Kemper Center, who's been one of our sponsors for the last 3 years. And, you know, one of the big things that we've been trying to do is drive traffic there and let people see how cool their building is.
Right.
Especially when we do it up the way that Port Arthur does.
Yeah, and plus, isn't it haunted? Or supposedly haunted?
I cannot comment one way or the other.
Are you not? There, did you sign an NDA with the Kemper Center about
the existence
of ghosts?
I did not. However, you know, there's Google, and
yes,
there's also a page on our Port Arthur website that specifically talks about Kemper Center, and you can see the history there. So if you are interested in learning more about the history, a quick Google search of Kemper Center will give you all sorts of stories, I'm sure.
Come on, it's 2024. Nobody wants to Google anything. They want everything given to them.
You know, I'm in the Google generation still.
Right.
I can
still use a phone book. So, I mean, it's a weird thing. Now, you've been making films since middle school. Was horror always something big for you in the very beginning, or did it something that you kind of got into later on?
It probably, truth be told, almost all of my movies ended up being horror,
mm-hmm,
like in the horror sphere. But it wasn't like a driving factor for what I was trying to make personally.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of gravitated towards I could execute that idea with either a meager budget or no budget, or I had, you know, the Halloween effects around the house, or I had an idea for a haunted clock and I could get my grandma's 400,000 clocks that she had in her house and I could, you know, get them all on camera.
Your
and
grandmother,
make them,
Doc Brown.
Similar hairdo.
Oh, okay. That works.
But, no, horror was not the end-all be-all for me as a filmmaker or as a storyteller. I just kind of landed there because most of my stories ended up revolving around that.
And horror is such a big genre because, you know, you wouldn't be able to do a comedy festival because there's not a lot of people out there on the indie scene making comedies if they don't have a bigger budget, let's say. Like, a lot of... Like, let's just say, for example, one of the films you have this year has Bruce Davison in it, right?
That was actually last year.
That was last year. Okay,
yeah.
But you're not going to get him on a $500 budget. But you're also... If you're reaching $5-6 million, that's probably big enough you can get somebody else besides Bruce Davison. So the films that are being submitted are more in the... I don't want to call it micro-budget, but that's what they kind of refer to it as. Like, $100,000 is micro-budget now, isn't it?
I believe so. I think it's anything that's under a million is considered a micro budget.
So what do you call the films we've been making?
Probably, honestly, if you're doing Hollywood standards, no budget.
Yeah. That's just how it is. It took you how many years to get the damn thing done? That's a film, well, by the way, that
yeah,
you directed. Yeah,
Damned Thing is a short film that I made. It took me about 6 months to adapt it and plan it. And truth be told, like, the full-blown editing process took me 3 months. The visual effects took less than a month. There were other issues that we ran into in post-production.
Mm-hmm.
How long
did you actually torture Mike Detterman?
Really just for a weekend, and then for some voiceover stuff, you know, so maybe another 8 hours there.
You should have said that there were a lot of reshoots that needed to be done of just him, like, water dripping on his forehead.
There has been discussion over the years of doing some reshoots, making the movie a little bit longer, mm-hmm. using existing stuff. I've kind of given up on that, though, so
yeah.
he escapes for now. Honestly, for Mike Detterman, if he gets the opportunity to be a part of the Damned Thing, he'll be the cinematographer.
Right, because that's what he's really good at. That's what he's really good at. Not that his acting is bad.
No, we pulled a great performance out of Mike. I think he could do whatever he wants.
You tortured him like Sam Raimi tortures Bruce Campbell.
Sure did. Kept him up until like 2 in the morning.
Did you beat him with sticks and stuff?
No, I did not, but I did refuse to let him sleep, and then he refused to let me sleep in return, which was fine.
Oh, good.
It's only, you know, fitting that Mike would be staring at me at 4 o'clock in the morning sitting on the couch next to my air mattress after we've been asleep for 2 hours, and it's like, I'm awake, so you're awake.
There you go. That's how it works. You got to torture each other, I suppose.
Yep.
Now, you do a lot of editing. I know that from experience. Mm-hmm. You've edited my film For Sale. You edited Becoming Undead 3. Is that something that you enjoy doing?
I enjoy the creative process. Mm-hmm. So editing, generally speaking, is the last time the movie's going to get told.
Right.
It's told one way in the screenwriting process. It's going to be told another way in production. And then post-production, it's told its final way. So I like that. Personally, I like directing. I like writing. I like all of those things. It's just editing was the one that I could do as someone who has limited resources. You know, mm-hmm. At the time when I edited your films,
mm-hmm.
I had built my computer for relatively cheap, mm-hmm. you know, $1,500 all in for monitors, you know, external
cards. And
that's
with all the Adobe programs and
all
everything.
All the Adobe programs, right. You know, it was pretty affordable for me to do that versus trying to find funding for features. Writing, obviously, is pretty free, but I mean,
right.
I don't want to say I'm a perfectionist, but I do scrutinize everything that I write pretty heavily. So I don't generally share or put anything out unless I feel incredibly confident.
Right. Well, and I think that, like, for me, when I'm writing, I'll write something down on paper first, and then when I'm transferring it over to the computer, I see that as a second draft, because you're going to see things as you go through that you want to get changed.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't show anybody until a third draft
yep.
at that point, because it's kind of... and for those, yeah, like he was saying, for those that don't know when it comes to making films, there's three times the film is made. It's in the script and in production and in post-production. And so whenever you're a director and you get final cut, you're really lucky.
You're very lucky.
You're
yeah.
very lucky.
You're Orson Welles lucky.
Yeah.
Russian native.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Props to the guy who drank a lot of wine and did a peas commercial drunk. So that was fun. I still think one of his best performances is in the Transformers animated movie.
You know, I like him in F for Fake.
That's really good, too. I really liked him in... what is the one? The one with the big long tracking shot in the beginning.
Touch of Evil.
That's the one, Touch mm-hmm. of Evil, where Charlton Heston played a Mexican.
That's right.
You know, because that works. Now, so you've made films professionally, semi-professionally for 10 years now. At what point did you think to yourself, okay, let's do a film festival? Especially in Kenosha. Not that there's anything wrong with Kenosha, but it's not exactly a huge market.
So it's not a huge market. But one of the things that really kind of pushed us to starting the film festival, my wife and I.
Hi, Jeanette.
Hi, Jeanette. Love you.
I don't, but he does.
Yeah. So we had this idea that, you know, everyone had been producing a lot of really good quality shorts for a number of years. And in December of 2021, I was considering doing a local screening of a bunch of short films.
I actually remember this. We talked about this at the I Dream of Psychopomp screening, where we'd have Becoming Undead 3, The Damn Thing, and then something else. I think it was Charlie Apocalyptico or something.
It was Charlie Apocalypto or Charlie Empty Factories.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there were other shorts, too, that weren't in the horror sphere. We were just trying to get some stuff done.
Right.
So we decided to not do that because there weren't going to be snacks.
Well,
my wife wanted snacks.
Gotta have snacks.
I said, I don't know if there's going to be snacks. We can do an after party. And she said, I want snacks. So she said, we should just do a film festival. And I said, okay. And truth be told, you know, the first year we pulled in about 300 people, you know, between the spooky market that we have and, you know, just general attendance. Which for a first-time film festival is nothing to shake a fist
at. It was very big. I had Becoming Undead 3 was there, and it was, and I I went through all 9 levels of the underneath that day because I was still wearing that giant boot on my leg, which was a lot of fun. But it's a really fun time. But so you started doing you got all these people, and like has the horror memorabilia, the tent that was there last year, I forget the name of the place.
Time Warp Collectibles.
Yes, Time Warp Collectibles. Are they going to be there this year?
Yep.
Okay, because I am going to sell blood and plasma just so I can get a couple of things there because they are very expensive, but they have the best stuff.
They have some amazing stuff. And like that's one of the things that kind of set us apart. So like first year, about 300 people attended. Last year, about 2,500 people attended.
Oh, really?
You know, so that's with the market, and that's with, you know, the movie and ticket sales. Ticket sales grew by 4 times.
Really?
So, you know, we had one sold-out screening opening night. We had...
Oh, that was the Beaver one,
that was
right?
Hundreds of Beavers. Yeah. And then, you know, the movie on the lawn had about 100 tickets sold for that. And then everything else, you know, all other, 58 films that we screened last year?
Now, that's something I wanted to ask you about, the movie on the lawn. This is only going to be the second year for that, right?
Correct, yes.
What made you decide to start showing films on the lawn with the lake behind it, so to speak?
Other film festival really does that.
Okay.
We're kind of the only one that I've really found that does that, and I think that separates us. Wisconsin and Kenosha in general, they love a festival, so if we can do something that is juxtaposed to it, physically juxtaposed, that's not... you know, behind a wall. I think it's a bigger selling point. One of my big, wins from last year, like mental wins. We were doing the after party at Apis, and my wife and I, we were heading up the elevator to join the after party because we were about an hour late because we were taking down a bunch of stuff at the festival and just kind of getting other vendors squared away before we closed up for the night. And we had two other people who were complaining about parking over by Kemper because it was so difficult to park over by Kemper Center. And we knew that was because of us.
And you just sat there and got a little smile on your face like, that's our fault.
I said, that was us. That was us. You know, although there's not a huge market for it, I think we're pulling the market out of their homes, out of their apartments, out of the woodwork. Because the filmmaking community is incredibly vibrant in southeastern Wisconsin.
Yeah, people don't seem to realize that.
They don't, because it's hidden.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone's pretty siloed. You know, not a ton of groups are making films with other groups. You know, it's pretty much, you know, the same 5 or 6 people, you know, with maybe a couple of, you know, people who are learning, you know, hopping in and then hopping out of productions.
Right.
But the main goal for us was to bring them all together. You know,
right.
We are able to bring in filmmakers from across the country, across the world.
So you're an international film festival.
We are.
There you go.
We are.
How many international films do you have this year?
Honestly, I'd have to go back and look. I know that we have 2 features off the top of my head that are international. It's Minori, which is in Greece, or it's from Greece. And that's a cool monster movie. It's been getting a ton of press. Check out their articles on Bloody Disgusting. It's awesome. Purgatory Jack is the other one that comes right to mind right now. And that actually stars, I don't know the actor's name off the top of my head, But if you've seen Schitt's Creek, you know this actor. He plays Mutt in, you know, throughout the series.
Trying to remember because
Alexis's original love interest.
Okay.
He's the son of the mayor of the town of Schitt's Creek.
Oh, you know what? I don't remember his name, but I know who you're talking about. Yeah. And right now there's somebody probably yelling at
the radio
or the computer, and they're saying, it's so-and-so.
Yeah.
Like, all right, well, sorry. We'll Google it later. And they're like, oh, it was him. Immediately I thought of Chris Elliott, but that's not. It's his dad.
Yeah,
that's his dad. And then there's Eugene Levy and Dan Levy, but no, it's not.
Yeah, no. This year we actually have a lot of name recognition that we weren't expecting. We have a movie with Tyrese Gibson.
Okay.
We have a movie with Cooper Andrews from The Walking Dead and Shazam. Danny McBride actually executively produced Hippo.
Really?
Which is also narrated by Eric Roberts from The Dark Knight.
Really?
And his wife is also in the movie.
Oh, wow.
Like, we had a lot of, and
best
I'm,
of the
I'm
best,
missing
Eric,
something.
Oh, Eric Roberts.
Troy Baker, so the movie On the Lawn
is
starring Troy Baker from The Last of Us.
Who also does the voice of the Joker as well.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, no, we ended up getting a lot of submissions from legit Hollywood names, which was very surprising but very welcome.
Oh, yeah, of course. You're not going to say no if something with Eric Roberts shows up.
No, absolutely not.
But you got to wonder, like, can he get James Earl Jones to come in? It's like, no.
That'd be amazing. I don't think any of them are coming out to the festival, although some of the, like, directors and producers of those projects are coming out. Generally, when you get to the Hollywood people, their schedules get a little tougher to work around.
I mean, it's Eric Roberts. How busy can he be?
I mean, have you seen his IMDb?
Fair enough.
He's generally pretty busy.
Fair enough. He's like Nick Cage working on everything at this point. Do you think at any point you're going to perhaps invest in, like, a bigger screen to, like, bring in, like, a portable bigger screen? Does that make sense?
Yeah, so generally we've been renting from a rental house that just does, you know, production rentals.
Mm-hmm.
We moved to a different rental house this year, so the screen in the main room is larger.
And that's the one where you walk up the steps to...
Correct.
Okay.
It's 150-seater. And then the one in Founders Hall, which is the one with the ramp, that one is also going to have a slightly larger screen this year as well with a better projector. So the viewing experience this year should trump each year that we've been doing it so far. And then next year, you know, we're looking at adding another venue. You know, we've gotten a lot of traction. We're very excited about the future of the festival. There's been a lot of people who have gotten very interested in it. So, you know, the future's bright.
Now, you had the Beavers movie. I can't keep forgetting.
Hundreds of Beavers.
Hundreds of Beavers.
Ryland Twos and Mike Cheslick.
Yes, you had that right over by Public.
Yeah, over at, it's the Herzing building, but it was the Backyard Dream virtual production studio.
Are you going to be having anything there this year?
Not this year.
Okay.
So last year we had a lot of growth, and then this year we really wanted to focus on stabilization and perfecting the experience for filmmakers and for any attendee. So limiting the venues that we were going to be at this year was kind of a goal of ours, just to kind of simplify it, boost as much attendance as possible, limit confusion on, like, where movies are going to be, because we definitely had people who showed up to Backyard Dream on, you know, Saturday and Sunday last year, and then showed up to Kemper Center on Friday. So, you know, sometimes people, you know, they get confused when they're, you know, where am I supposed to be?
Right.
So this year the idea is that we get as many people as invested as possible, from an attendance standpoint, and then next year broaden our horizons and, you know, potentially add a second venue. I know that we want to keep Backyard Dream in the shuffle. You know, we've had some ideas for, like, late night screenings and that kind of stuff. But ultimately it's going to depend on what their availability is for, like, 2025.
Right.
And, you know, what we get for submissions. You know, if you do a late, if you do like a midnight screening, you want something that's going to be either gruesome or somewhat inappropriate.
You know? you want something like that one movie I submitted that, I don't want to say its name. but yeah, it's not for the faint at heart. Do you ever think that maybe you might be doing, like, one-off screenings? like hosting things, like at the Roadie, just kind of be like, you know, hey, we're showing XYZ movie, sponsored by the Portofino Film Festival, that kind of thing. Do you see any of that coming up in the next year or two?
I see that potentially coming up if we have a local film that needs to get screened, you know, for the community to see. We would definitely partner with the filmmaker on that, especially if it's in the horror, sci-fi, you know, sphere. If it comes down to, like, a holiday-style screening, like, I'd love to screen Krampus, you know, and bring out one of the filmmakers or one of the actors from Krampus, you know, do a Q&A. That'd be amazing.
Right.
But that all comes down to funding. You know, that comes down to scheduling funding, the bandwidth for people to really be able to plan and execute that.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, you know, the majority of the year, the team that's working on it is my wife and myself.
Right.
You know, so we're stretched a little more thin than I want to be to add more events right now. But if we're able to build our team, build out programming, and, you know, kind of assign those peripheral screenings throughout the year, we'd absolutely love to do it.
Because I was thinking, you know, that what would be great is not so much Krampus, but if you want to get, like, something really that, and it would Silent Night, Deadly Night. Because, especially since, you know, Wisconsin is where the whole ordeal started.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody saw the trailer for Silent Night, Deadly Night during Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah.
And Mom lost her mind, and all of a sudden. And for those that don't know, did you know Silent Night, Deadly Night was beating Nightmare on Elm Street in the theater before it got pulled for 2 weeks? It was beating Nightmare on Elm Street. Yeah, that's crazy. Or you could just show part two because it's got most of part one in it.
That's right.
And you could bring out the guy who played the brother. You know, Garbage Day. I'm sure he's cheap.
He might be. Hopefully, he's still alive. I got to check.
Is.
Oh,
he
perfect,
is.
Perfect.
Yes. Because they just showed Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 a few years ago on Joe Bob.
Nice.
Yeah. So, and then they impaled Darcy on antlers, like
as you should.
Yes. So going forward, I mean, do you have any ideas what the second venue might be that you're interested in? So in case maybe they're listening, they're like, what is this Porto Theater you speak of?
We have a couple of feelers out there for multiple venues.
Mm-hmm.
There's been no, like, hard agreements so far, so mm-hmm. we're probably not looking at really coming to a conclusion on that until, like, I don't know, maybe October. Probably around the time that we announce, you know, the opening of, you know, submissions for 2025 and vendor submissions for 2025.
Isn't it great that everything is always like almost last minute-ish?
You know, it's not super last. I mean, it is Kenosha, so a lot of stuff is last minute.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's we've been talking to people for about 3 months now.
Mm-hmm.
So can't guarantee anything, so I'm not going to say anything on the air, but the feelers are out there. There's definitely interest from those venues. So we're going to pursue whatever options work best for us and the venue.
Perfect. Now, this year, is there more vendors going to be at the festival? Like, I know usually you have, like, Immoxicated.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They're going to be there?
Yep. They're there both days.
Because I know their physical location closed, and that bugged me. But
yeah, but they still got their truck. So they'll definitely have their mocktails out there. We have a bunch of food trucks that are coming out. Captain Mike's will be out there.
Oh, there you go. That's what I'm saving my money for. Get some Captain Mike's in me.
Dude, let me tell you.
I'm from the north side of Racine. I can't exactly get to Captain Mike's it's not easy to get there.
It's
all
not.
The time.
No, it's about a 40-minute drive for you.
Yeah.
But Captain Mike's, definitely, they'll have their burgers. I think last year they did in-theme mac and cheese, so I'm not sure if they're doing that or if they're going to do another in-theme style sandwich. We've got a ton of other food trucks coming out. We actually have about 25% more vendors this year than we did last year.
Oh, wow. So the parking lot's going to get even worse.
Potentially.
Yeah, well,
Trucks, generally, they drive ins, you know, so
that's not exactly a bad thing, though.
No, it's not a bad thing for us. You know, we have overflow parking, too. So, I mean, that's,
go.
Yeah.
And what solutions. What is the movie on the lawn this year?
That'll be Phoenix Incident, and then that's the one with Troy Baker.
Okay.
It's like a found footage documentary style film about a group of friends who are in the Phoenix Desert in Arizona, and they're just hanging out, and something comes out of the sky.
Okay.
The visual effects are wild. If you watch the trailer for Port of Fear, the last clip
is from Phoenix Incident.
The last clip before our title, our little bumper, is the Phoenix Incident.
So it's kind of like Fire in the Sky.
You'll have to see.
Oh, I guess I'll have to see.
It's a definite must-see. For me, it's a definite must-see.
Okay. So bring your lawn chairs, because none are provided.
That is correct. We don't have the funding for lawn chairs in that way, so if anyone is listening and would like to sponsor the festival by providing up to 300 lawn chairs, we're listening.
Yeah, I have one in my trunk, and my dad got so tired of me asking to borrow his his chair that he just said, take it. It's part of your inheritance. I'm like, thanks. I see how much you can.
For that one too. Like, there are like benches, you know, picnic benches out there that, you know, for out of town filmmakers or people who just didn't read necessarily that it was bring your own chair. There are some seating options. I recommend bringing out a blanket, grabbing a snack from the spooky market, and just chilling on the lawn. We're praying for great weather that day, so just prepare for it.
Now, is there going to be a pre thing like last year at Public, or is it more just like the 2 days? Kind of. Are you basically minimizing the overhead to increase the profit to put back into the festival?
Well, we're not expecting necessarily any profit.
Okay.
Our main goal is to streamline the experience.
Okay.
So there isn't going to be like a pre thing the night before, because it would be Thursday. And right now, like, we're still kind of testing the waters with how, you know, the Friday all day screening is.
Mm-hmm.
Next year we could open on a Thursday. We'll see.
Right.
But we do have an after party on Friday, mm-hmm. like we did last year on Saturday. We'll be at Apis.
Okay. And where's the after party on Friday?
The after party's at Apis.
Okay.
Apis Rooftop. They're going to have they're planning at least some in-theme cocktails for us. You should be able to get a burger there if you're desperate for a burger, if you're not satiated by all the meals that you could have had.
Now, who's going to be at the spooky market?
How do you mean?
Like what?
Like vendors? Like,
yeah.
52 vendors.
Any ones just kind of spring to mind?
I mean, probably the ones that would probably spring to mind are the ones that have been with us, you know, all 3 years. So there's Crone's Craft, there's Paul Hoppner's Horror Masks, there's Moxicated, there's Sizzy's Creations, there's Captain Mike's is going to be there on Friday. We have Final Girl, who's the new horror bar that's opening in Kenosha. They're actually going to be offering...
Well, I didn't know about this.
Yeah, so they're going to be offering some snacks, I think nachos and, you know, the like, on Saturday.
Okay.
So that's going to be like a preview for what they're going to do at their bar, which is going to be pretty awesome.
Okay.
And, I mean, there's 3D printers, there's crochet artists, there's...
Authors,
there's comic book authors, there's memorabilia folks, there's tons of people. There's tons of people coming on, tons of different vendors, so if you're not into... There's iron fabrication. I mean, yeah, sculptors. There's a variety.
If you really need a suit of armor.
Well, actually, no, his stuff is pretty cool.
Really?
It's pretty cool stuff.
Okay.
It's definitely more like... it's my art piece in the house, but, I mean, we have taxidermy.
Okay, Norman. You know? All right.
So, I mean, yeah.
A boy's mother is his best friend.
That's right. You tell that to a poltergeist.
Yes. Oh, wow. Now this is all going to be on the 13th and 14th. What time does it start on the 13th, rather?
So we are kicking off the spooky market and screenings at 3 p.m.
Okay.
And then we're going to be going until about 10 p.m. I think the movie on the lawn, the way we have it scheduled right now, as long as sunset is the planned time that we're going for, like, dark, you know, dusk. We should be out of there about, like, 9:30, but the market will go until, you know, 10 p.m., so people need to get their last-minute trinkets or get their last-minute snacks. They can absolutely do that before they pop over to the after party.
Okay.
And then on Saturday, we're starting it off early, 10 a.m., and then going to 8 p.m., and then at 8 p.m., we're moving into the award ceremony, which is same as the market. It's free to everyone to attend. So if you want to attend the award ceremony, as long as we're not packed out.
And this is at the Kemper Center, not at Apis.
Correct.
Okay.
So, and then after the award ceremony, we'll be moving over to Church and Market, and we'll have some snacks. And they're also planning on doing an in-themed horror cocktail for us.
Okay, perfect. So don't forget to head out to the historic Kemper Center, September 13th and 14th, for the third annual Port of Fear Film Festival. I want to thank you so much for being on. It's been a blast. I love talking movie stuff with people who know what I'm talking about, because a lot of times when you're talking to people about movie stuff, they
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts, and you know, it's.
And I will tell you that it does take a lot to make a movie. So if you want to support these independent filmmakers, this is the place to do it. Tickets are reasonable. Head over. What's the website? Port of Fear.
PortofFearFF.com. Okay. Tickets start at $10. Passes go from day weekend passes. Day and weekend passes for me are the way to go. They're discounted based on just the overall price of a single use ticket. So get that weekend pass because it's the equivalent of getting every movie minus the cost of two.
There you go. And you can sit outside and watch a movie on the lawn and all sorts of stuff. So I want to thank you again for being on here. I want to thank you for listening to Community Matters. I'm Ron Pertee, and we will see you next time.
And now for segment two of Community Matters for this Saturday morning, Marcia Connett interviews Melissa Donaldson, who's president of the Big Sisters of Racine County. And this is a rebroadcast from a previous program.
Good morning and welcome to Community Matters. I'm Marcia Connett, your host today. And with me is Melissa Donaldson. And Melissa is president of the Big Sisters of Greater Racine. And we're going to talk about that really wonderful organization. Melissa, good morning.
Good morning, Marcia. Thank you for having me today.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here because total transparency, I'm a former president of Big Sisters and so have a very special place in my heart for the organization, but I've been away for a few years and I know you've done some really wonderful things as president. And I just wanted to have our listeners hear a little bit about this organization. And even though we call it Big Sisters of Greater Racine, volunteers can come from anywhere to the organization. Isn't that correct?
That is correct. We take volunteers from anywhere. Anybody who's willing to help and mentor our girls or volunteer and be on our board, we are always on the lookout for volunteers. So
great, great. Well, we're going to talk about that in detail. But what I wanted to do was start out a little bit to make clear to everyone, this is not Big Brothers, Big Sisters. That's an entirely different national organization, right?
Correct. Okay. We are just a local organization.
Yep. This is Big Sisters of Greater Racine, which has complete ties to Racine and has a really kind of interesting history. And I was there when history was made, or at least within a couple years of that. And I know you were telling me before we went on the air that on your website is more information, certainly more information about the organization, but there is some information about its history. But what it's missing is that when I was a young woman in college, I did a lot of my undergraduate in-service work with Judge Algram in the juvenile court system in Racine. And he had just, in several years prior, found a group of women to help him establish an organization that would guide young women. And this is what now today is Big Sisters of Greater Racine. That original advisory board, I think they called them, right?
Yeah, the advisory board of the juvenile court is what they were called.
Made up of a number of junior league people, and that's one of the reasons I know about this. But I remember even in working with Judge Algram through his court that he would occasionally order young ladies, girls between probably 10 and 16 at that time, to look into Big Sisters of Greater Racine because he just didn't feel like that support network was available anywhere else. And it has grown into a very professional organization that does amazing things.
That it does. I just started being involved with the organization since 2018, I think it was. I got on right before you left.
I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and last year at our banquet, it's just amazing because we had one of our graduating senior girls talk about how the organization has affected her and how she was going to be so sad on leaving the organization because it really helped. It was really helped her throughout her life and all the friendships she made and all the very cool experiences she got to have. So it was really cool to hear how we, from a girl, how we actually yes. were able to help them. So
absolutely. Yeah, I remember at our 50th anniversary celebration that we had a number of years back, we had a person who spoke who had been a little sister and now was a big sister. And what a neat way to pay it back or pay it forward, I guess, to, you know, having had such wonderful advantages of being a little sister and now knowing how to really be a great big sister. So I think that's really wonderful to see. So tell me about what Big and Little Sisters do.
We have an activities committee, and our activities committee gets together once a month and plans various activities for the matches to do. So that's something that we pay for as the organization through our budget that we get through fundraising. So they do anything from painting. They did some, we did an etiquette class 1 year for our older bigs on how to like prepare yourself for entering the job force, the workforce and stuff like that. So it was, we do a lot of things to do that, but we also encourage our matches to meet on their own. So they'd go out and do various outings. Some like to cook, some like to go to movies. It's kind of what they want to. And they work with our only paid employee, the director of volunteers, from the beginning. They set up the matches and get everything up and going. So yeah, that's kind of what the basics of what our organization is about.
Okay, so if I were a big sister, it wouldn't cost me to go to any of these activities that you put on for us?
Not at the moment, no. We have, it used to be, Kathy, who is our vice president, and I were talking about this the other day, about how they used to charge the bigs $5 to come to the activities. Mm-hmm. But over the past couple of years, since COVID hit, we've been trying to make sure that we cover it for everybody so that it's not extra cost for anybody.
Oh, that's wonderful. And as a big sister, my little sister and I could do things that don't cost anything. I mean, like you say, we could, you know, bake cookies, or we could go to the library, or we could, you know, go for a walk, go to Petrifying Springs, go to...
Yeah, there's plenty of activities around the racing area that you really don't have to, it doesn't cost you to do, just to hang out and just be a friend to these girls who need just an older, mature female figure.
Yeah.
To be able to talk to. And
in a big sister is not there taking the place of a mom. A big sister is that other set of ears to just listen, right?
Yeah, just to be there. I mean, I don't know. I had older women in my life who I looked up to, and I think that's what these women do for these girls is they're just their mentor, their friend, outside of the normal parent structure, you know, like does somebody outside the situation where they can talk to about anything if they need to.
Sure. Well, and I think in some cases, you know, as a mom, I would be thrilled that my daughter has another person, an additional person in her life to, you know, just to do things with, especially if I were a mom of multiple other kids. What a relief it might be to know that my daughter is out with somebody who can really have a positive impact on her.
Exactly. Exactly.
Tell me about the kinds of women who are big sisters. And I know sometimes we call them bigs, and I don't want people to think that's being mean. Big sisters, but the bigs as
right.
opposed to littles who are little sisters.
I have to admit that I'm a little on the outside of dealing with our matches. But we have a variety of women who are from retired women to working women who just want to make an impact in another girl's life. So we run the gamut of just good-hearted women who want to make a difference in our community.
Is there an age limit, lower or higher end?
I would not say so. Like, I would think at least to be a big, you would at least have to be 18.
Okay.
You know, an adult in the legal standing. But I don't think that there's any age. I mean, if we have a lady who would love, I don't care what age you are, come and join us. We'd love to have you. There are always more girls on our waiting list than we have mentors. So we are always on the lookout for new big sisters.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Well, and I ran into one of the big sisters at a meeting that I was speaking at just a couple weeks ago. And I would guess she's close to my age, so I'd say mid-60s or beyond. And she is still just as active a big sister as anyone. And so often when we hit a certain age and maybe we've retired from our jobs, our kids are grown, and we're just thinking, gosh, those were the good old days when, you know, when we were taking our girls to movies or to just go shopping or whatever. What a perfect job or volunteer opportunity it would be for me to be a big sister if I were in that situation.
Absolutely. And again, like I said, there's no age. I mean, as long as you're an adult and you're willing to mentor girls in our area and be a positive role model, that's all we're asking.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Now, is there training if I say I want to be a big sister?
Yes, you will work.
Figure it out?
Yes. So our director of volunteers would work with you. She's got a whole program that they would work through on getting you into the program. We do background checks because we do work with children. So we make sure that we do background checks on all of our volunteers, including our board members. So that she will handle all that. Our director of volunteers will work through that whole process with anybody who would like to volunteer.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click Shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
I'm Gregory Berg, and I hope that you can join me for Monday's morning show here on WGTD. Monday kicks off National Assisted Living Week, and we're going to be talking about what assisted living is and what people should think about if they are pondering it as a possibility, either for themselves or for a loved one. I'll be joined by Nancy Davies and Lisa DiBartolo, who are community outreach coordinators for Library Terrace Assisted Living. Monday's morning show begins just after 8.
In a world filled with possibilities and wonder, we can always find grace in between the music. Join me, Lily Maselli, host of In Between the Music, and enjoy trivia and music together. For dates and times, visit WGTD.org.
WGTD HD, Kenosha Racine.